Hello everyone and welcome back to Going Purple with me, Lissy McIntosh, where we talk about serious F1 stuff in a not so serious way. Hello everyone, I hope you're all having an amazing week, day, whatever time it is that you're listening to this. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Going Purple, and this one is so incredibly special because I am joined by such an amazing guest. You guys don't even know what I have in store for you yet. I have got the incredible Sky Sports F1 presenter Natalie Pinkham joining me today. I have so much respect for Natalie and just admiration. I met her about a year ago now at a McLaren event. I've had the honour of being able to kind of chat with her a little bit over the last year, and she very, very kindly agreed to come on Going Purple today. So yeah, I mean, I don't really need to give Natalie too much of an introduction because, you know, she is truly one of those figures that the sport would not be the same without. She has been part of the Sky Sports F1 team since 2011. She has worked in other sports previously to that, and she is, yeah, one of the faces of Sky Sports F1 now, and an incredibly inspirational role model and figure, and someone who I personally look up to so much. So yes, I hope you enjoy our conversation. We talk all about the season so far, how the racing in Formula One has changed, and the racing product, and what that could look like over the next few years, but also, so, you know, juggling the challenges of motherhood and working in Formula One. That's something that, you know, I have not got experience in, and it was interesting to talk to Natalie about, and the challenges of being a woman in motorsports, but also things like the Baku sprint format, and also which races we may run the track at some point. You guys know I made a promise to you and I intend to keep it. So yes, I hope you enjoy. I also just have to say before I get into this interview, just a big thank you. I don't know if you guys have seen on social media that Going Purple was actually featured on billboards. There are multiple billboards all around the UK until the end of the weekend. So pretty much for the whole week this week. The main one being in Leicester Square. That's where I remember going as a kid to the theatre. It's like this special treat, and looking at all the billboards and just thinking, wow, this is so cool. And you just, they're dreams that you never ever think are going to happen to you, to be honest. But I just have to say a huge thank you to all of you who listen and support the podcast. I have said it too many times, but I hope it doesn't lose meaning, because I mean it more every time I say it. But I would not be able to do the things I do, and we would not be able to grow the community that we have without all of you. Anyway, okay, I'm going to actually leave you alone now because I'm so sorry. You literally came to listen to Natalie, not me. Okay. Anyway, enjoy the sprint this weekend. But for now, sit back and enjoy this interview with the one and only Natalie Pinkham. Let's get into it. So nice to see you. I feel like I've seen, the last time I saw you was in Bahrain. But it seems like only a few days. I feel like the year is going so quickly. But how have you been? How's your break been, your spring break?
Really well, thanks. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. A four-week break.
I know.
Bizarre. Because it felt like we built real momentum up for the season opener. And then I didn't do Saudi. So then it was sort of like, oh, okay. And then I was supposed to do China, but then that didn't happen.
Yeah.
It's great. You just got to make the most of it when it comes. And I've been on proper mum duties for the last 4 weeks.
Oh, I mean, that's something I would love to chat to you about later on, and how you manage it all. Because, I mean, I've noticed starting to work in Formula One, there's just so much, there's so many moving parts, there's so much travel. But I'd love to, you mentioned there that you were in Bahrain, and obviously the season's progressed so much since then. I'd love to start by getting your thoughts on how this F1 season has been in terms of the racing, and whether you think it's been a good season. 2021 was this huge year in F1. There was this big rivalry, and it was kind of made for the screens, right? And now I think the racing has changed so much. So I'd love to get your take on the season so far.
I mean, Red Bull have just been in a league of their own, haven't they? So I think that in itself is worth celebrating. Just how much pressure they've sustained over the last couple of years, and they've still managed to come out fighting. You know, this is a team that were dominated by Mercedes for a number of years, and It shows a couple of things. It shows the resilience of teams, and it shows the fact that teams dig deep, work hard, never give up. But it also shows that Formula One is cyclical. And I think that we just go through stages. We go through periods where a team dominates, and then that changes. And I think we should just enjoy that for the process that it is. I doubt very much we will see another season like 2021 in my lifetime.
In your lifetime?
You couldn't have written it. To go into the season with these two protagonists that promised so much, but then to be at the end of that season on exactly the same points going into the last race. For what happened to have happened, it was worthy of a Hollywood script. In fact, I've said it before, it would have been cast out for being unrealistic. It was just insane. So I don't think we should always judge everything by that. Obviously, that piqued excitement and interest and brought millions of new fans to the sport. But I think what we now need to do as broadcasters is take those new fans with us and say, okay, that was unprecedented and incredible, but there are so many subplots to this sport, and we're going to take you on this journey to show you that and show you the subplots and the depth of the sport and the fact that there is so much else to enjoy. And I think that's what you're seeing with this season, is that yes, Red Bull are dating, and people say, oh, well, you know, the season's done already. It really isn't. I mean, just look at Aston Martin, for example. Within itself is this fascinating subplot that a team can really have come as far as they have in such a short amount of time. And I think it gives hope to all the midfield teams. In fact, all the teams up and down the grid. We don't have back markers like we did in the old days.
Someone
languishing at the back and thinking, well, why are they even here? I mean, it must be so disheartening to go to a race and just keep being lapped at the back.
No, you're right.
It feels like all the teams are in the fight this year. And I think that is really worth getting excited about.
Wow. I mean, you mentioned so much there about the way the sport has changed in terms of the on-track as well, but also the way that you spoke about broadcasters bringing fans along the journey now. I mean, I would say there's so many more fans in F1 now. I would love to know from your perspective how you think F1 has changed in, you know, you've worked in the sport since 2011, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's a long, old time. And I would love to know from your perspective. I mean, I love what Sky Sports is doing. You guys have the broadcast rights, but you also bring so much on social media with your new podcast, with the YouTube channel. And that's great because so many F1 fans won't attend a race in their life. How do you think F1 has changed since you've been in it in terms of the broadcast and the media and the off track as well?
Wow. I mean, that is a big question. We could talk for an hour about it. It's evolved a lot. Yeah. I love how much more accessible the sport feels. I love the fact that there are content creators like you in the sport. That just wasn't a thing when I started in 2011. In fact, I could count one hand the amount of women in the paddock. It felt quite a lonely place for a woman in Formula One. It felt almost as if we were sort of, well, look, put it this way. I remember Mark Webber saying to me, because I'd worked with him on a sports show before I came into F1. And he was the first person I told that I'd got the job at BBC 5 Live. And I said to him, I'm really nervous. You know, I love Formula One, but I don't know what it is to work in it. And I you know, don't know really how I'm going to cope. And he said, you just got to get your elbows out. And it struck me that that was true on so many levels. It was true in the literal sense of being in that sort of pack of journalists and broadcasters all huddled around a driver. Get your elbows out.
Yeah.
Know that you belong and get your microphone in, get the quote that you need. But it was also in the sort of metaphorical sense that believe in yourself, know that you're there. And I think that took me a long time to get to that point that I felt that I really belonged.
Yeah.
In fact, I was at sea for at least 6 months. I mean, I really was. I felt incredibly nervous about where you're supposed to stand, who you can and can't talk to, what processes were. And so what I love seeing now is just how much more open it is, how many more women there are, a lot of younger people, a lot more diversity. And I feel really proud of the sport for getting to that point. I don't feel we're there yet. I still feel like we do have a long way to go. Mm-hmm. But I feel that we are making progress in that respect.
I agree. And I think it's important to recognize progress where there is being some being made. And I mean, I feel really touched by what you said, because I feel, you know, I'm just starting out my career in Formula One, and last season was my first season in the paddock and beginning as a presenter as well. And so I know for a fact it's now the women who have been there for longer. I go to them for that advice, and to kind of see you around in those situations as well, it means more than I think a lot of people know. So I mean, it's a tough one that you didn't have that, but now kind of I see you as that figure as well. So it's very kind of full
look, as long as you know that you can always pick up the phone to me, you can. Aww. I mean, I feel that you've just taken to it like a duck to water, and you seem very confident and assured within the paddock. Great. But if you have wobbles, because we're all human, then just call me. I mean, seriously, look, we're all works in progress, aren't we? And so I think we could probably help each other. I tell you what, Naomi Schiff is someone who is younger than me, but someone that has said to me, you know, thanks for your support in me joining the sport. And I said, no, honestly, I need to flip that on its head, because her coming in has really helped me. I feel like I've got a friend. I mean, don't get me wrong, the boys are all great within our team, and we see a lot of each other because we travel together. But it's so important to have other women and to have that kind of sisterhood feel, because I started in the sport with Georgie Thompson. I don't know if you remember, but Georgie and I started together at Sky, and Georgie and I had gone to boarding school together. I mean,
no
best friends
way.
From the age of 12.
Did you ever have a moment where you looked at each other and you were just like, wow, look how far we've come?
Well, we couldn't believe that we were both working in the sport we both loved and for the same broadcast. I mean, we couldn't, it was a proper pinch yourself moment. But when Georgie left, I don't know, I felt quite downbeat. And I remember thinking, God, I don't want women to leave the sport. I want women to come into it. And, you know, I remember when Claire Williams left, I felt pretty down about that. And Manisha Kalterborn from Sauber, you know, I suddenly we were losing strong female role models and representatives within the paddock. And I think, you know, there are enough of there to keep the momentum up, but we do have a duty. We do have a responsibility. I definitely feel that as a mum, particularly of a daughter, that I want her to feel that she has the same opportunities as my son. And I have to fight hard for that. And I remember when I found out I was pregnant thinking, well, that's it. You know, I'm not going to, that's my career over. I remember thinking that. But Sky were amazing in that moment. And I remember walking through the paddock with my little belly sticking out. And somebody, one of the girls in catering at McLaren came up to me and she said, please come back after you've had your baby, because we need more women to show that it is possible.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, it's not easy. It's never been easy. But, you know, who wants easy?
You're right. I think...
Well, I do.
Well, I wouldn't mind. I'm joking.
I wouldn't mind it.
As women in sports, you're right. I think we come to work with our job at hand, but also that kind of duty and that extra added being a pioneer for diversity and equality, as we should do. But I mean, it is very interesting. And also what you mentioned there about juggling so much. I mean, I don't know how you do it. And I can imagine it's incredibly tough sometimes having young kids at home and also, you know, traveling the world and working incredibly hard. You know, have you learned anything along the way? Has it got easier or has it got harder as they've got older? And what are some of those kind of challenges that you've been able to overcome?
Do you know what? I would never want to whip the violin out and say that it's been hard, because, you know, I've got a great life. I've got gorgeous kids, lovely supportive husband, and a great job. It is a constant juggle, and the guilt is real. I mean, you never feel like you're doing a good enough job as a mum, as a broadcaster, as a wife. Constantly question yourself. And I remind myself of the fact that I grew up with a working mum. My mum still works. Actually, she'll hate me for disclosing her age, but she is 70.
Okay.
And she's still working full time as a barrister.
Wow.
Giving a voice to those that don't have it. I know.
Oh my God, mum is the coolest
really
person.
Hard part of law. I know, she's amazing. Wow. And so she She represents a lot of kids. Child welfare is her specialist area. She does family law. And it keeps her young, actually. It keeps her brain active and busy and interested and interesting. So she's always been my role model, and I always got to her whenever I need advice in terms of juggling things. But I suppose logistically it is tough in terms of the travel.
Yeah.
And the fact you don't want to feel a long way away from your kids. So when I was in Mexico, both my kids got sick.
Oh no.
And they were really poorly, and they FaceTimed me, and you just want your mum, don't you? You just want to cuddle when you feel, even now, yeah, I just want to cuddle my mum when I'm poorly. But Sky were amazing, and Sky just went, I remember my boss, Billy McGinty, just saying, Pinks, just go home. Just go. We'll manage.
Yeah.
There's nothing more important than family. So I think that the knowledge of that support gives you a confidence to go to races. That, you know, when push comes to shove, you can go home if you need to. I also think that having a supportive partner where there's parity with your careers, my husband really believes in what I do, and he loves Formula One, and he thinks it's important for our kids to have a working mum who's a good strong role model for them. And really growing up, I was always taught that there was no substitute to hard work. Like, you just got to get on with it and make the best of it. And so, and I try and take my kids to as many races as I can. I think you're right.
Way.
It probably does get a bit harder as you get older. But they're probably about the right age for the Red Bull racing program now, aren't they?
For the Vegas Grand Prix. well, you mentioned there about when you were growing up and your younger years as well. And I know that you worked in other sports before you joined Formula One, like tennis, and I think tennis and football were your main ones. Is that right? Where did the love of sports come from for you? And did you, when you started out in early broadcast, your earlier broadcast days, did you see them as a stepping stone to F1? Or were you kind of just all guns blazing then, and F1 is something that came later on?
So we as a family have always been fans of F1. So it was like appointment to view television on a Sunday afternoon. That and Ski Sunday. You won't remember that. You're way too young. No. But actually, it's come back. But this is the first incarnation of it. And rugby special. So we always used to, I mean, it was just like a marathon of sport on a Sunday with an apple crumble in front of the telly. We've always been a really sporty family. We grew up near Silverstone. My brother was always passionate about Formula One. And I just wanted to spend more time with him, really. Hang out with him. And so I kind of got into it vicariously. And he, when I had the job with Five Live, I mean, he was like, hang on a minute, that's the job I was supposed to get. But he was going through just becoming a father at the time. It wouldn't have worked for him. But it did for me. And then he pops along. In fact, he's coming to Monaco this year.
No way.
He does. Look at him cherry picking the decent ones. I see. Yeah. I said, I want to see you when it's throwing it down in Spa.
Yeah.
I want you to come and camp and sit on the hillside. That would show you a true fan and, you know, properly supportive of your sister. But I love all sports. Athletics actually is probably my favourite. I used to grow up watching track and field. I was obsessed.
Did you do any?
You won't remember her either. So that was my big thing was running. I used to love running.
Wow.
I do. There was a runner called Zola Budd.
Okay.
Who ran without shoes. Google her. She was this skinny little thing who was just incredible athlete. And she would never wear shoes. So she used to run without spikes.
Why?
And I never wore shoes because of Zola Budd. She did naturally, because she grew up in South Africa, naturally that she just ran without shoes. And actually, to put shoes on was really alien to her.
Got it.
So I did the same. I drove my mum mad. And actually, I tried to persuade my husband to name Willow, our daughter, Zola.
Oh, love the name.
My other hero growing up was Gianfranco Zola. So I thought, somewhere, the Chelsea icon and Zola Budd. But I was pregnant at the time of Zika and Ebola.
Oh, okay,
and
no.
I thought it sounded like a fusion. So I thought maybe
let's
Zola. And actually, the truth is, I said to him, "Okay, Google the word Zola. See what the thing that comes up. And if it's good, we'll name her Zola." So he googled Zola, and it came up as a stripper in Las Vegas.
You cross that off the list instantly.
Yeah, it's Willow.
What a great start.
But I kind of regret it because I think Zola's a cool name. But anyway,
Zola's a great name, but we can name something else Zola at some point.
When eventually you have a baby,
I'll call her Zola.
Yeah, you can have the name. There you go.
I'll show her this video back then. Yeah. Well, I mean, I actually really want to run a track this year. I don't usually go on the track runs. You know, I'm usually more of a spectator in that sense. but I think I want
you
to run one.
You definitely should.
I know, but it's quite long, isn't it? So we'll see.
No, it's not. Stop it. I just agreed to do the marathon next year.
No
Believe
way.
It. I'm like,
don't you have to start training for it?
I know.
Quite soon, surely. Huh? You've got to start training for it quite soon, surely.
Well, no, apparently you're supposed to start 17 weeks before the marathon. So, and I do train quite a lot with my husband anyway, okay. But...
Can I ask a question?
Go on.
Are you going to wear shoes?
Ah, good point. Oh my God, that's what I should do.
You should do the last bit with no shoes on and then you can wear a sign that says Zola.
In tribute to Zola. Oh my God. Do you know, I did actually meet her once. I had to interview her and she thought I was an absolute nutter because I was so obsessed with her. I like knew her life story and she's quite a shy lady. And I just like bombarded her with questions. The camera hadn't even started rolling. My cameraman said, "Now I haven't even started, but I'm so excited to talk to her."
Oh, that's so sweet. Well, I am going to ask you about some of the new tracks on F1 as we kind of come towards an interesting point in the season. Now kind of the European leg, but also we've got Miami next week. Are you going to be in Miami? And how weird was it for you? You're not going to be?
I'm not going to be in Miami. It feels like such a long stretch, but then I've got this like absolute... I don't want it to sound in any way negative about the amount of races I've then got to do because I've had such a long gap. And actually, you know, some people give their right arm to be able to go to this many races, but it's something like 5 in 6 weeks that I go to. So it's like insane. But I'm not doing Miami. Okay. But then I'm doing like Imola, Barcelona, Monaco, Canada, Spa, Italy, England. Doing Vegas. So I think it's about 12 more. So
Vegas makes
a really lovely number, manageable number when you've got kids. Yeah. So.
Oh, well, that's exciting. Are there tracks that you look forward to going to every year? And have you kind of found the best spots in all the cities that you go to now?
So when we first started back in 2012, I'll give you a little insight. It was a lot of fun. None of us had any kids or responsibilities and we basically treated it like a 9-month stag do. We went from race to race to race. We never came home. We just went out, traveled, saw the world, had a great time. And now we're much more responsible. And we come back and we don't get time to really enjoy the cities that we go to because I want to be on the first flight home so they can get back in time to do the school run on a Monday morning. But back in the day, it was just such a privilege to see the world. And we would go to all sorts of places. I mean, South Korea obviously is no longer on the calendar, but we used to go to a place called Mokpo in South Korea. And it was so cool and quirky to see the different cultures.
Yeah.
And it was a genuine honor to meet people and become as immersed as you possibly could be in the space of a week in a different country. So we went to all corners of the earth and we saw some really cool things. I remember going to Monaco for my first race with Crofty and Ant. And Crofty said to me, "Listen, Pinks, you've got to treat this as a marathon, not a sprint. Do not go too hard on the first night in Monaco. You will burn out and you'll feel horrific." And of course I get there and I'm like, this place is insane. I mean, it's a joke. It's surreal. And of course we work really hard and then we go out the first night and we have a massive night out, like loving it, lapping it up. And by the second day, I was just like, "Oh my God, Crofty," he said, "I told you. You've just got to man up and get through the weekend." And obviously by Sunday, I had a really croaky voice, which is not great for radio. Yeah. But I learned a lesson. Good. And now with Monaco, you have to pace yourself. Much like the marathon next year, I have to pace myself.
I'm going to use this advice. It's my first Monaco Grand Prix this year. So you've just given me
I'm going to look after you. I'm going to look after you. You're going to love it. It's also Naomi's first
No way. Well, there we go.
So we'll stick together and I will drag you, Cinderella, to bed before midnight every night.
Until Sunday.
We'll be no partying. And then Sunday you can let loose. Yeah.
Okay. Good idea. This is the good mentor advice I've been looking for. So there we go.
There you go. You thought it would all be about broadcasting, right? And it's not. It's about pacing yourself on
the important
weekends.
Things. Well, I am going to end by asking you about who your money is on for this year's World Champion and Constructors Champion.
I mean, I don't think people will be surprised to hear me say Max Verstappen and Red Bull. But I don't equally, I don't think if you're not a Red Bull fan, you should be disheartened by that either, because I think there will be so many other cool things to enjoy about this season. And I think it's great to celebrate a period of dominance of who is a magnificent. It's so interesting because when Lewis was dominating and some people say, oh, this is so boring. Really what you should have been thinking is, God, how lucky are we to witness this level of dominance?
Yeah. And you covered it on broadcast as well. So, I mean, you were right there in the action.
Yeah. And you know, it's something we will tell our grandchildren about, because they will look back and they'll say, God, what was it like? You know, much like they do with when Schumacher dominated to the extent he did. Obviously, I was very young then and I didn't work in the sport, but it was... Therefore, the fact that we were there when Lewis did what he did, and we are here when Max is doing what he's doing, just take it for what it is. Take the positives, enjoy every minute of it, because it's a very special sport and it's one that we're really lucky not only to work in, but to be fans of.
I agree. I think it's so interesting as well how much emotion goes into the sport. I mean, any sport is emotional in a sense, but, you know, looking at how Mercedes are approaching this season and how much they're having to fight back and truly work as such a big team. But, you know, there's two drivers who go out and try and get those results. And what is behind that is so much... There's such a big ecosystem behind these F1 teams, and to see how they're reacting and to see how they're handling that. But also, you know, the teams on the rise with Fernando and Aston Martin and Lance, of course, as well. It's very interesting. It's interesting to see kind of the human emotion that goes into the sport as well. And it's so much more than just a results-based industry, I think, anyway.
Absolutely. So, no, you're absolutely right. And I think it's interesting to see Mercedes in an unfamiliar position. It's territory they're not used to, having dominated for as long as they have, and that's when you learn the most about yourself and about each other. And you're absolutely right, working in Formula One is a lifestyle choice. You have to fully throw yourself into it, and with that there's a lot of pressure, but there's so much reward as well. And I'm talking about everyone through the garages, through catering, through PR, through broadcasting. It is a privilege and it won't last forever. So we have to make the most of now. And it's great. Enjoy every second of it.
I know, I agree. Have you explored any other racing series? Have you been to a Formula E race or?
I explore, yes. I physically don't have the capacity to go to any at the moment, because if I'm not in Formula One, I'm doing something with the kids. But I think that is something that we potentially do more of, you know, when I leave Formula One. And
you've got my job
at Sky Sports. No, but I'll be there in the Zimmer frame as your mentor, hobbling down behind you in pit lane.
We'll be carrying you around the track. She's not leaving.
That would be good, wouldn't it?
Oh, well, Natalie, thank you so much for being here. I know we've both got to go and catch up with Quali now.
I mean, I have to say, I do love the tweaked format of this sprint race weekend. It's great. I think, you know, the fact that we've got entertainment and competition every day of the weekend can only be a good thing. And I think that gives fans real value for money. And again, it goes back to that accessibility point that I made before. This has to be a sport that is really open to its fans. And I love the fact that the sport is listening to what the fans want. And hopefully they will be pleased with the results this weekend.
I agree. Also, I think now, because their quali result is secured on a Friday, they can give it their all on Saturday and not have to think about where they're going to be starting on Sunday. And I think that's going to add something else as well. But Baku, sprint in Baku is very interesting.
I know, pretty we'll risky see. As well. I tell you what, so Monaco's your is Monaco your next race? Are you going to Miami or Imola?
Going to Miami.
I'm trying to work out the first one that we're going to run together.
A short one, please. The shortest track on the calendar.
We could do Monaco, but you have to dodge the champagne bottles.
Okay,
and the
shall we do
and
that? And not fall in in the harbour.
You've also got to dodge the traffic because the minute the F1 cars are off, the normal traffic comes onto the track. It's kind of crazy. It's not the easiest to run, but I love running Baku because there's that amazing straight. You can really open up. But we've missed it for this year.
I know. We'll do it.
I'm going to put together a running program with you. Oh, what about Holland? Do you do Holland?
Yes, I will be there.
That is a brilliant one to run because the fans stay in the stands the whole time and cheer you on.
And watch you run.
Yeah, like literally as a DJ and they clap and cheer you on. All right. You literally feel like a rock star running around.
All right, let's do. We'll make up for Miami then. We'll get some tunes on and run around.
Perfect.
Lovely stuff. Well, thank you so much for joining me. It's been fab to
chat. It's lovely to see you.
And enjoy your next few races. 5 races in 6 weeks. It's crazy. It'll be fab. Thank you so much.